Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a fun one.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. This has been in the making for a few weeks now. I have so been looking forward to this episode. We have in studio with us this afternoon, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with Prevention, Mr. Steve Maul. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys today?
We are doing good. Yesterday we had a fun time at GSU Entrepreneurship Center and Institute. I learned a lot of cool things there. But here we're talking about something really important, right?
Yeah. A few weeks back, well, actually a few months back, I got involved with Prevention primarily through Kiva.org. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kiva, but it's a micro-lending site. And I'm a trustee at Kiva, which means part of my responsibility there is to look at U.S.-based borrowers who are trying to either start new businesses or somehow innovate and become entrepreneurial. And I came across one of the opportunities there was Rick Collins and looking to start a firm, or actually had started a firm, looking to fund a firm to really focus on preventing school tragedies, mm-hmm. Which is very near and dear to my heart. Although I've been fortunate not to lose someone in a school shooting, every time one of them happens, it just rips my heart out. And I before I was willing to sponsor Rick's loan, I said, you know, I needed to talk to you because I wanted to make sure that his philosophical approach was akin to mine and that I could wholeheartedly support it. And it didn't take but a few minutes on the phone to recognize that Rick had a really great vision, a really good approach for taking it to market and bringing a very high value service to schools to prevent tragedies instead of just wonder what happened after the fact. And so, and nobody can really talk about that better than Rick. So I'm really glad that he's able to join us today. And Rick, let me introduce Rick Collins, the founder and CEO of Prevention.
Welcome, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Check's in the mail.
Well, Rick, tell us about your vision and the mission.
Well, simply put, back in 2015, there was a school shooting in Oregon. And it started, you know, put the seed in place that we just got to do a better job at protecting our schools. And ironically, now it's evolved into churches and, you know, corporate campuses. And I was at the time, I was running a veteran-centric nonprofit. And I thought, wow, we've got thousands of unemployed veterans. Who better than veterans to protect our schools? And 2015, it wasn't the right time, but after the Parkland shooting, it was. And I decided, excuse me, I got a frog. I decided that I was going to move this concept that I had forward. So middle of last year, I started looking at the school safety business in general. And working with some friends, some Navy SEALs, some law enforcement SWAT team members, we basically sat down and we said, you know what, this is just all about reaction. This is all about casualty mitigation. And one of the terms we use is all about the semblance of security, making people feel more secure when in all reality they're not. And so we wanted to take a run at this and really change that mindset where we put some certain tools in place that can make people much more secure. And being the marketing guru, I guess, we felt that we're all about prevention. So we coined the term pre-evention so that we focus solely on what needs to be done before an event is likely.
Now, currently, what's in place right now in most schools, like you've seen in the news, there's, you know, maybe a policeman or a security person that stands around that I guess is, but that's their version of prevention, a deterrent. But a lot of times they don't go back in the school if something bad happens. Like, what is kind of the current state today? And then what is your solution?
Well, if you think about it, and you don't have to be a special forces operator or a SWAT team member to to put some common sense thinking around this. We spend, this country spends hundreds of millions of dollars in the school environment. The budgets, Title II, Title IV, the STOP Act is multi-billions of dollars. And the vast majority of it is spent on what we call fixed assets, like cameras and now metal detectors. And, people have even talked about smoke machines, ballistic windows, ballistic shutters. And in combination of that, the human element is quite often an SRO, which is a school resource officer, that is quite often kind of deployed between multiple schools, or third-party guard companies and or law enforcement, retired law enforcement, or where they have an agreement with the city that they'll pay half of a police officer's salary and the school district will pay the other half. So, I don't know if we've got 2 days on this show, but if I kind of break them down, and I want to be clear, there's no downside to having these things in place, but they're just not effective. If you take a shooter who comes upon on their way into a school, who comes upon a metal detector, they really couldn't care less if the metal detector goes off. They're committed to their path that they are moving into. Cameras don't take down active shooters. Cameras don't sniff drugs. They take pictures of people who are committing the crime. Those people don't care. In fact, if anything, they want their picture taken. So you could, from a very common sense viewpoint, you could address these sort of security options, if you will. And when it comes to the humans, we've learned and we know that people with weapons have to be trained, and they have to be highly trained, because they have to overcome two main fears. They have to overcome the fear of the threat, and they also have to overcome the fear that they might make a mistake. Those are not easy to overcome, and you don't overcome them by going and getting the guard card and spending $35 and being employed for minimum wage or barely above minimum wage by a guard company. So I don't want to spend too much time on why these sort of solutions are ineffective. So our approach is a lot more proactive. We basically have four levels of services that they're interconnected. They can be applied individually, or they can be applied as a collective. The first one, which is something that has been practiced for generations, especially if you look at countries like Israel, and that's cognitive and situational awareness. We're simply not aware of our surroundings. Military special forces are, police officers are, we are aware of what is going on around us. And the term I like to use is that we notice hiccups that you wouldn't notice. If you're in a restaurant and somebody's got the hiccups next to you, you notice. It's just one of those things. We notice things that you won't, and we are then in a position to address them. So how do we get everybody to be on the same page?
Now, when you're saying we, who is the we?
Well, we have some Navy SEALs. We have former police SWAT team members. We have a person who's spent the last 10 years teaching cognitive and situational awareness to Homeland Security, to TSA, to Navy SEALs of all people, to the FBI, Secret Service. This is a tool that the military or the police establishment has had for years. So we've taken it and we've kind of civilianized it, for want of a better word, because we can take this into a school. We can go to a school in one day. We can teach and educate. We don't want to preach to people. We want to teach and educate. We can teach and educate the teachers, the staff, the parents, and the students on how to be more aware. So instead of one security guard outside the school being more aware, you now have 100, 200, 300, 400 people who are more in tune with their environment. And this is not complex. We're not turning people into Navy SEALs or, you know, the kids Mutant Ninja Warriors. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're just educating them. It's a dormant sense that we all have, and we're reactivating it without it sounding too scientific, but that's what we do.
So that's the first part, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the first part. It is cost effective. It is a great force multiplier, which again is a good military term, but it's a great way to get everybody in tune. And you can do it with a serious fashion with the teachers and the staff, but then you can engage the parents and the students. We did a national survey, and 84% of people said, you know, principals and superintendents said, we wish we could find a way to engage the parents and the kids more. This is a perfect way to do that. It's a perfect way to engage your community so that when there is an anomaly or a hiccup in what's going on around you, even the youngest kids can notice it. You know, if you go into most schools today and you leave a backpack in the playground, kids will just run by it and go back to class.
Right.
Now, after we've been there, they'll bring that to somebody's attention. Or, you know, somebody's sitting in a car outside school. Why are they sitting there? Hey, Mr. Smith, that guy's sitting there. You know, he's not picking up any. You know, these are little things that can be done by everybody, and it will increase the security profile of that school.
And it becomes a deterrent if a bad guy thinks, oh, everybody's paying attention now. I can't just kind of slip in and slip out the way I would like to.
Yeah, because people talk. And that's a great deterrent. You know, conceivably, if you put a big sign outside a school that said, this school is protected by 5 Navy SEALs with machine guns, nobody's going near that school. whether they are protected by 5 Navy SEALs with machine guns is irrelevant. But we can't rely on the bluff, if you will. So we have to put some of these strategies in place to prevent these threats long before they become realities.
Right. So the first level is this kind of educate and teach certain skills to the teachers, the staff, the students, the community. Let them know that, hey, this is going on. You're all going to be educated and you're going to learn how to spot hiccups or little anomalies that might be happening that you might not have been aware of. So you raise the awareness. What are the other stages and levels?
Well, the second one, which is a touchy subject, which we position ourselves to stay away from, and that is, you know, weapons in or around campus. The national survey we did is pretty funny. 86% of Texas principals and superintendents said yes, schools should be allowed in the school environment. California was 66%.
They said yes, 66% of California said there should be guns.
Which was
for guns in the schools,
now,
yeah.
Now, teachers, arming teachers, Texas was still very low. They don't want armed teachers, and California was even lower. So we have this dynamic that the people on the front lines are, you know, predominantly saying, yes, we want weapons in our school, but we don't want teachers and we don't want them armed. And so that naturally steers them to two other options when it comes down to it: third-party security companies or law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the third-party security companies, they cost a small fortune. On average, a school might pay $40 an hour for a third-party security guard to sit on their butts. I jokingly call them Fat Freddies who sit outside. Hopefully I'm not upsetting somebody who's large whose name is Freddie. But When you're paying $40 an hour for that person and they're getting paid $14 out of that at that money, you're not getting highly trained specialists protecting that school. Now, it's not their fault. It's the system's fault. So our approach is we've got to get, if a school agrees to have a weapon in the school environment, that person had better be trained, and they'd be better be trained to a high level, not just in how to shoot a weapon and, you know, but people skills, cognitive and situational awareness, tactical awareness, basic medical. This person has to be your go-to person for all your safety and security. So if you're going to invest in safety and security, why not invest in a human who's trained to a much higher level? Why not invest in somebody who's vested in the school? We've seen it time and time again, you know, in the Parkland shooting. That person didn't go in and, you know, possibly would have saved many lives. And people say he's a coward. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think he wasn't vested in the school. He wasn't vested in the community. He didn't have kids in the school. He didn't know the teachers. It's a psychological part of the process. But we want to teach them how to be more effective, not in just pulling a gun, but when, how, and why they need to use a weapon. Everything below that, we can also teach. Society focuses on active shooters. But anybody in the school environment knows there's a lot of other threats. There's bullying, there's drugs, there's gangs, there's pedophiles, there's all kinds of threats. And this individual, once they're trained, can help deter a lot of those threats.
Now, would that individual be at the school full time?
Oh, yes. Yep. So we have a lot of schools. And like I said, we did this national survey to, you know, over 40,000 people. I was surprised how many people had SROs. But then when I drilled down even more, we were surprised to find out that they might have one SRO for five or six schools. It doesn't take a genius to know that if I'm a bad person and I know that that person in the uniform who's in that police car or has got that big badge on, who's carrying a weapon, just left the school and drove away, I now know that school doesn't have any quote-unquote armed coverage. So if we're going to have people in the school willing to carry a weapon, whether that's a teacher, whether that's an administrator, whether it's a superintendent, a principal, we just want to make sure they're trained. Because I'm telling you, and my God, I hope I'm wrong, but if we arm teachers, it is only a matter of time before somebody gets their weapon or they shoot the wrong kid. I mean, it's going to happen. And in our world, we routinely say, you never take a weapon to the bad guy. So if we're going to have weapons there, we've got to train them. We've got to train them to a much higher level. And, you know, and I don't think it takes a genius to realize there's something we must do. So when you look at the cost factors, because everybody in the survey pretty much said budget, you know, they're paying, you know, $140,000 a year to have one guard. And I know this for a fact, $140,000 a year to have one security guard outside the front gate of the school whenever the school is open, actually an hour before and an hour after. For that $140,000, you could add somebody to your headcount. You could add a local veteran that we could train up who would be vested in the job, would be passionate about protecting the school, would be trained, somebody you could rely on, so that when and if it ever gets to the point, which we hope it doesn't, and that's our whole mission, when and if it ever gets to the point that an active shooter threat does present itself, you know that that person is going to be taken and going to be taken down very quickly. And that's when it comes down to it, is what we have to do, because you can take a lot of lives in 1 minute, 2 minute, 5 minutes, 6 minutes. And in Parkland, I believe it was about 12 minutes. So we can do better and we can do it for less cost.
Now, the media plays a role in this, in making it seem like the threat is happening a lot. Statistically, would the use of these security officers be more to handle the stuff that you mentioned before, the helping and bullying and the day-to-day kind of stuff that goes on, or just be prepared for this kind of, you know, big event?
Well, you know, when you come down to it, and we talk about hope a lot, and I think the scales between hope and practicality are tilted way too far towards hope. When you have we have approximately 100,000 schools in the country, and that's, you know, not including C-level universities and community colleges. And if you have, I think last year was 25 active threats on school shootings. So it doesn't take a genius to know that, wow, that's very few out of 100,000 schools. So let's just hope it doesn't happen here. You can hope you don't get in a car wreck, but you can't apply hope when children's lives are on the line. You know, Sandy Hook, Columbine, Parkland, these are not schools in you know, Southside Chicago where, you know, you would mentally say, wow, you know, this is a troubled area. We need to be very, very aware. There is no rhyme or reason to when an active shooter will hit. So you cannot rely on hope. So when you have that mentality, which the media kind of feeds on, you know, and you, I guess in a perfect world, you could say, hey, don't report a shooting, because people who decide that they want to shoot at a school or a church, when they know the media is going to cover it, that is part of their motivation. That's part of their goal. When you're a terrorist, the notoriety that comes with being a terrorist is one of the predominant factors.
You know, one of the things that we always talk about in our business is that hope is not a strategy. Mm-hmm. And you can't just rely upon that. And you know, you mentioned bullying. And all of these become interrelated, because you look at a lot of the active shooters that we've had in the past few years, there was a bullying factor in there. There was a discipline factor. There's a lot of things that go on within the school environment that become interrelated that lead to those kinds of tragedies. And the more well-equipped the school is to look for those and deal with those proactively, the fewer shootings we should expect.
But it sounds like the prevention solution is training, and then putting the right people in the right place to be successful.
Well, it could be, Rick can go into this, but it could be training. It could be the provisioning of the guards. It could be the school resource officer. It could be a canine, which Rick didn't talk about in great detail, but there's a canine function here as well. So it's whatever the school needs. What I love about Rick's approach here is the flexibility. He talked about those four areas being independent yet integrated. And so whatever the school's going to need is what they're ready to do.
Yeah, we may have a school that absolutely, you know, on religious grounds, and we do. We have a school out here in California that for religious reasons will absolutely not have a weapon anywhere near that school. Bad people know that. So you have to come up with other options. You have to be more vigilant. You have to increase some of the fixed assets and the early warning systems. The thing that's worth pointing out here is that there threats do not come overnight. Like if somebody doesn't go to bed Thursday night and get up Friday morning and say, I'm going to go shoot up school, there is signs along the way, and training people how to recognize those signs from cold tip and situational awareness all the way through to threat assessment and identification is critical. In the survey we did, the mental health issue was just a big red flag for superintendents and principals, and the frustration that they feel at being powerless to do anything, even though they know that child might need some serious help. We did a seminar, and we asked how many people, you know, how many teachers in this room actually can think of in their careers a child that would likely be an active shooter, and I was shocked at how many people put their hands up. So we have to kind of play with the rules that the bureaucracy and the, and everybody else and the social and the media and everybody involved in this process, we have to fit into that without necessarily changing their overall opinion. So we have to be creative on fitting in there where we're not profiling somebody, we're recognizing something. And that's a challenge, but we can do it if we can get to the point where we can have discussions with the superintendents and the principals.
Now, Rick, for your company, you were out there on Kiva trying to get funding. It sounds like you're out there and doing the work right now for several schools. What do you need more of? How can we help you?
Well, we're still looking for some Series A type investors to take us to the next level on the sales and marketing side. I think just putting us in a position to be able to teach this mentality to people is golden. Even if they never use our services, even if they can't for political, religious, ethical reasons, if we can get the bulk of people on the front lines of school safety and security to start rethinking what they're doing and taking it to a preventive level instead of a reactive or casualty mitigation level, then my day would feel pretty good if I could have this type of conversation with every school principal and superintendent or safety board in the country. I know that some of them will take this and they will run with it, and they will get the force multipliers in place, and they will make sure. I mean, one of the analogies I use is, we wouldn't let a janitor do brain surgery on our child, but we routinely let somebody carry the awesome responsibility to keep them safe, and we know nothing about them. We don't know their training level. We barely know their backgrounds. So we need to take the protection component of our teachers, of our staff, and our kids a lot more seriously if we're going to ask somebody to protect them.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about prevention, the best way to do that is by going to pre-evention.com. Steve, this sounds like a great organization doing good work. I know you're involved in helping them grow. Where do you see the biggest opportunities in the near future for them?
It's really in getting the word out to some of the schools to let them know there are options to fortifying the campuses, to in making investments in those fixed assets that Rick talked about that may not actually, they may be great at helping you catch the perpetrator, but not necessarily preventing
it. And then this is a way to be proactive in I'm going to say the word elegant, but in a way that isn't really ineffective. This is using resources that should be used for this type of work,
and it's resources that have been proven. This isn't new.
Right.
The whole approach is taking what we know works. Why certain airports that you go to internationally are terror free because they prevent it. They don't just deal with it when it arises. So we know this stuff works. It's just a matter of, as Rick said, civilianizing it so that we don't feel like we're putting our children through militaristic training.
Right. And again, the website is prevention.com, PreEvention.com. Thank you so much, Steve Mall, for bringing this to our attention. And thank you to Rick Collins, founder of Prevention. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.